Welcome back to another episode of Behind the Vinyl. This time we are joined by the very enigmatic Biff Byford from Saxon. Saxon just released their latest record, Carpe Diem. It's a monster. Really, this is I think one of the later day classics from Saxon, and one of their all-time best in their career. The guys are playing absolutely amazing. Biff is singing amazing. Great songs. Great slab of music, 10 amazing songs. Check it out. Hope you enjoy the chat with Biff, the ever entertaining Biff. Make sure you go and check him at Sweden Rock Festival this year when he's over, and also at Gröna Lund in Stockholm. And go and check out the record. It really is a great record. Hope you enjoy the show. Bye. Alrighty, Biff Byford, welcome to Behind the Vinyl, mate.
Behind the Vinyl. Behind the Vinyl is side B, isn't it? That's Behind the Vinyl.
Yes.
Side B, what does, I've never heard that before. Behind the Vinyl, side B.
Oh yeah, there's a side A and a side B on the vinyl.
Oh, obviously behind it is side, yeah.
Exactly.
Well, really, is there a side B and a side A? Really,
because you have to turn it over.
Well, yeah, which is side A?
Back in the day, it used to say side A, side B on the middle.
Exactly. But when you're looking at a record, like let's take Carpe Diem, for instance, would you really say like Supernova, you know, or Black as the Night is a side B and not a side A, you know? But what we'll do is
If the side A or side B, if it's not running right, because we've been around a long time, we have a lot of wisdom. We'll change the track listing sometimes on a vinyl so it runs better. In fact, I think we might have done that with Thunderbolt, or it could have been the one before that. But you know, some songs run too long for one side, so the quality of the bass end isn't as good. So sometimes you have to refiddle it so you've got even amount of time on each side of the vinyl. So in that respect, sometimes vinyls can be different.
Yeah.
There you go, you see.
Yes, there is
a side A and a side B.
Yeah, I've never picked up on that actually before that you've done it. But in saying that, how important for you is sequencing of a record? Because for me, it's quite important as a listener.
Very, very important. I mean, I spend a lot of time going through the track listing and how the songs flow from one to the other. It's not just like pulled out of a hat. I mean, we take a lot of time on that. We take a lot of time on the album cover, take a lot of time on the thank you list. I mean, the whole album situation, there's quite a lot that goes into it. But yeah, I want to open the album with a bang, you know, so Carpe Diem worked. But sometimes we'll have the title track third in or something like that. It just depends how it sounds opening the album, really.
Right.
Well, I mean, if you listen to the album, you got me talking now, mate. If you listen to the album, both Carpe Diem and Pilgrimage have a beginning, right?
Yep.
So originally I was going to call the album Pilgrimage.
Yep.
And that beginning was going to be the beginning of the album, until I changed my mind and put Carpe Diem first. So, but I think it works quite well, you know.
Well, in saying that, did you then add that intro beginning to Carpe Diem, or was that already there?
No, that was there. It's a much shorter one, actually. But yeah, that was there. And, you know, I mean, I asked Nigel to write it, obviously. Nigel does all our keyboard beginnings and things. But you can see how we did the different listing, because I put Carpe Diem first. And I mean, if Carpe Diem would have been third, I may have took the beginning off, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah.
So I just thought it worked on Pilgrimage, so I left it in.
I think as an opening track, I think Carpe Diem is a great opening track, and it's a real kind of sets the tone, because there's no fucking around on this record. You know, it's pretty intense, it's pretty heavy, it's very guitar-y, and it's kind of like a slap in the face from from the get-go, past that little intro, which kind of builds you up, but that opening scream that you have in Carpe Diem and onwards, it's a great track.
It is. It's a killer track, yeah. There's some great drumming in it. There's some great everything in it, actually. I think the boys played absolutely fantastic on this album, and you can tell they did, so it's really on a high level, the playing. And like I've said many times, you know, I wanted to start all the songs with a guitar riff. So the initial me picking the songs I was going to write, the melodies and the lyrics to, I picked them from guitar riffs because I wanted guitarists that excited me. And those are the ones we picked, really. So that's how the album came together. So I think it's a little bit of a unique way of writing that we did there.
back in the day when you just had vinyl, and as we were talking about side A and side B, and you had to flip the vinyl and, you know, start off side B with a bang. I mean, do you remember if that changed once the CD took over? Because then you got like just one long flow of songs.
Well, we had cassettes back then. That was quite popular, you know, back in the day. I mean, we sold as many cassettes as we did vinyls. In fact, I probably seem to remember that we actually sold more cassettes than vinyls. The Americans had 8-track back then as well. That everybody had in their car. So if you're going to listen to music in a car, which everybody did, they had a cassette. So I think a lot of people bought the cassette and the album. In fact, usually when you get a gold disc back then, the cassette was on there and the album, you know, so they're both together. But yeah, I think back in the day, we thought about what would open side B and what would open side A. We had to have two big openers, you know, because albums got played on radio a lot. Don't forget, we had a lot of singles then as well. You know, back in the 1980s, everything was a little bit more single-orientated, you know, sort of seven-inch vinyl, seven-inch picture disc, you know, seven-inch EP. So back then, the marketing was still very strong, but that's how they did it back then. I suppose now, with a CD, but we treat CDs just like vinyl. We don't really, you know, we could put like, you know, an hour and 30 minutes on a CD. We could have 80 songs either side, but we still think that, you know, quality beats quantity every day.
And, absolutely.
You know, and vinyls came back in.
Yes.
Strong. And I think, you know, we were among the first bands to bring vinyl back, I think, you know, back in the day. We always have a little eye on the vinyl. I wouldn't say that we spend that much time on the track listing, but we always have a little eye on how it plays, you know, when you flip it over. The answer to your question is, I think back in the day, we took a lot of care of the track listing on an album. These days, we still take care, and we may well change the vinyl track listing, pure and simply because of the quality of the sound coming from the needle. Because as the needle gets to the middle of the album, the bass response deteriorates. So you need it's a bit of a history lesson. You need the grooves on the album need to be as wide as possible to reproduce the sound that we've put on there.
Right.
Yeah. So that's it. So you have to have like, you know, I don't know. I think it's like something like 14 minutes or something like that. It's a very tight, you know, because back in the day, people used to like go out their way to make a loud cut on the vinyl. This was the big thing in the day, you know. Like people got the first Van Halen album, and it was so fucking loud, that album coming off the vinyl. We were like, how did they do that? How did they do that? So we'd like all go down, you know, we'd all do the cut differently and compress the mix and everything. And, you know, it was crazy back in the day. We were really involved with it, you know.
you mentioned the riffs. I mean, Saxon has always been about the riffs, going way back. You have some of the coolest guitar riffs out there. It's always been great with Saxon.
Yeah, I just think it's gone a bit. In the last few years, bands have gone away from guitar riffs a bit, though, and they've gone more into like a, you know, starting with some, you know, symphonic sound thing. There are big choirs and things, and, you know, the song is fucking huge, and, you know, it's all great and sounds brilliant, and we all love it. But actually, I wanted to get back to a more raw guitar riff orientated song. That's where I'm coming from. I think that's why people sort of get the feeling that this album's a little bit like a denim and leather type.
Right.
We didn't really go for that. I just made the guitar riff the most important thing to start the song with. And I think, you know, I mean, we had so many guitars. We had to, like, you know, on Age of Steam, we created something else at the beginning of it. So it didn't start with a guitar riff because it was right. Like a bit too obvious that every song started with a guitar riff. But that's where I was coming from, that rawness of that guitar, you know, like when that chord comes in on Wheels of Steel or Denim or leather, or the guitar starts on Lionheart, you know. But yeah. I think it's very easy to write a song from a melody, you know, a chorus progression, rather than a guitar riff. Maybe I'm totally wrong, but I don't think I am. I think there's a mad idea I had, and I think it paid off.
Right.
And I think we'll probably do the next album like that as well, because it was great.
Well, cool. Where are these riffs coming from? Because you said you collected all the riffs from the guys.
Well,
so it's not just Paul sending them through.
A lot of the ideas for the riffs come from Nibs, the bass player. He's a great guitar player. But, you know, I mean, the Carpe Diem riff is a Paul Quinn riff, for instance. Right. Pilgrimage is a Paul Quinn riff. I think Doug's got one in there as well, but you know, I don't really care where they come from, and neither do the band. Mm-hmm. You know, they let me pick the songs because they know that, you know, from having a guitar riff to a finished song is a fucking long way. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's a lot of work from like a guitar riff to having a song, you know, like sort of Age of Steam or something like that. Takes a long time to get that song to that level, but you know they're good. I mean, the band are brilliant. They're not really, you know, there's no jealousy in there. They just know that what's best for the band goes, you know. And I think that's what's kept us going through the years a lot as well.
Yeah, you're coming up to 50 years, but seriously, the playing from Paul and Nigel and Nibs on this record is top, you know, absolute. You know, top shelf stuff from them. It's really, really good.
It is, definitely. And, you know, I mean, me and Andy were pushing them to you know, to play those riffs. And, yeah, they did a great job. I mean, you know, the drums are like absolutely pounding. Nigel, you know, I don't really know how Nigel does it. You know, he's mental, that boy. We'll be right back.
But Andy,
yep.
I mean, you've done several albums with Andy Sneap now. I mean, is that something that you just feel like that will continue now for a number of albums?
Well, Andy's on the team, you know, and the thing is, Andy's on the team of a lot of bands.
Yeah.
And Andy doesn't work with just anybody. Obviously he likes the money, but I don't think he really is money, you know. It's not driven by money, Andy. It's driven by whether he likes the band and their music or not. That's what drives him, yeah. So I think that's why he always does a great job, because, you know, he absolutely loves what he's doing. I mean, this album was slightly different because we did a lot of different, my studio and his studio, so we sort of co-produced it together. But, Andy knows how to make Saxon sound like Saxon. That's the only thing I can say, really. And I suppose now he knows how to make Judas Priest sound like Judas Priest. Now he's done their last album, you know. So, there are, you know, some similarities between the last four Saxon albums and Judas Priest Firepower, because, you know, he knows... You know, he's worked with us a lot, and that's the sort of thing that Judas Priest needed.
Yeah,
and they came back strong with Firepower.
Definitely. Yeah.
Andy's kind of changed his direction a little bit. He was that Megadeth, Testament, Nevermore kind of guy. Now he's kind of turned to that Accept, Saxon, Judas Priest, you know, the kind of like the bands. I think he does a few things.
I mean, he did the Man of Math. I mean, I was down there partying with the Man of Math a couple of months ago, you know. He does a few bands that are sort of, you know, more extreme than Saxon and Judas Priest. So yeah, he does do Testament. I mean, he does do other bands. I think We're between us, Priest, Accept, a Man of Math, and maybe two more. He's probably busy all year. I mean, some of these albums take a long time to do. I mean, you know, ours was fairly quick at the mixing session, but some of them go backwards and forwards quite a lot, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of co-producing, so you recorded at Big Silver Barn, your studio. And with Seb, right? And Seb, your son, he also, you obviously had the record with him out last year, but he's doing backing vocals on this for the first time, right?
No, he did backing vocals on the Inspirations album.
Oh, all right, okay, right.
Yeah, all the high voices on the Inspirations album are him, you know. So he did a lot of work on that with me. But yeah, I mean, it's the first Saxon album, studio album he's sang on. But he did quite a few. I mean, remember The Fallen? We did a bit of, the chanting on Carpe Diem, all that stuff. So it was good fun, you know. I mean, he's a great singer, so you may as well use him.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's cheap as well, you know.
Well, he I'm sure he owes you some money for all the dinners over the years, mate.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah.
Let's go, Nick. Should we go through a couple of songs?
Sure.
Pilgrimage. You were talking about that was going to be the opening track. It was also going to be the title of the record. Talk us through. It's also the third single, the most recent video.
A bit of an 80s feel, like 80s Saxon on that one, I feel.
Well, it definitely tips its hat to Crusader, yeah. Which is probably one of the reasons why I didn't really open the album with it. I really wanted people to discover it. I mean, that number three, going back to the Behind the Vinyls again, boys, that number three position on a vinyl was actually the most important position on a vinyl back in the day. They always used to say, you know, that number three position, the opening track's great, second one, okay, third one, whoa, you know, so we didn't do it for that reason, but that was a big thing back in the day, that number three position. But yeah, what was the question? I forgot, sorry.
It was more tell us a little bit about it, you know.
About the song.
About the song and how it means to me. And just Pilgrimage in itself, you know, because that could be a Saxon, you know.
It's one of those things, you know, I like words, basically. I play around with words. That's what I do. I mean, I'm a bit of a storyteller when it comes to songs. So I like just that word, pilgrimage. You know, obviously it has medieval religious connotations of people doing pilgrimages to the Lord or somewhere like that, you know, to where miracles happen. But actually, if you think about it, people do pilgrimages all the time, you know, to see different people and to see where their fathers were and fought in the war and things like this. So, yeah, I just thought the word, and I wrote the song around the word, really. So it moves through, each verse moves through a section of a pilgrimage, basically. So I think it worked pretty well, you know. So basically, I came up with the title and then wrote the song backwards from there.
Very cool. Following that is Dam Busters. This is actually one of my favorite songs in the record.
it's a great song, Dam Busters. You have to know, yeah. I mean, these guys, you know, when I was a boy, the legend of the Dam Busters was like, they were really famous, these guys. It was a bit what they call boy zone comic stuff. Yep. You know, these fearless young guys went off in their planes to drop these bouncing bombs on these German dams in the Ruhr Valley. And it was a bit of a suicide mission because a lot of them got killed. But even so, it was a legendary thing. And, you know, one of the planes actually is stationed quite nearby where I live, actually. So you can go and see it, this Lancaster bomber. So yeah, I thought it was a good title. You know, it sings well. Damn, Buster, I like it. You know, good.
Yep.
But, I mean,
that's a killer riff, by the way.
Yeah.
It's a great riff.
That's a Nibs riff, you know.
All right, okay.
When I picked that riff and the boys heard it, they were like, you're kidding. I was like, nah, you can play it, mate, be fine. You know, so they turned it into their style, you know, like they do. But it's still a killer riff, man. It's so hard to play like for that long, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
I was thinking, like, back in school, I mean, was history one of your favorite subjects back then?
Yeah, history and music, actually, yeah.
Yeah.
It was, actually, yeah. Definitely was. I quite like geography, but history and music were my strong subjects, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's maybe not so ironic that, you know, there's history in your music, you know, and geography, and you basically travel the world. You know, you spent the last nearly 50 years traveling the world.
Yeah.
I have. And, yeah, it's... I'm very lucky.
Long before the twilight, the plane was standing by. Round group gather in the dust, the voices asking why.
Remember the Fallen. See, this is a little bit of a mystery. Following something like Dam Busters, you could actually think Remember the Fallen. You could assume that it's about that, you know, or it's somehow related in the war, but it's obviously nothing to do with that.
Well, I have written quite a lot of songs about soldiers and their treatment in war.
Yeah.
You know, like Broken Heroes and Power and the Glory, things like that.
Yep.
Some people that didn't have the lyrics, I insisted actually to the record company that people should have the lyrics for this album rather than just listen to the album. They should definitely have the lyrics because there's some quite deep lyrics on the album that people should know, you know, read them before we do interviews, definitely. But doesn't always happen, obviously, but it's better if somebody's read the lyrics. You would think it's about, you know, the First or Second World War or some war, we're remembering the fallen soldiers. But no, it's about COVID. And, I was in two minds whether to do a song. It was one of the last songs I wrote. Remember the one we had the music and I had another title for it. But the chorus flowed really, really, really lovely with the Remember the Fallen. Really worked really well. So I thought I'll do a song about COVID, basically. And it's a song about us really thinking about COVID, you know. Where did it come from? It's still a mystery, you know. It came along. Some people died, and some people had no reaction to it whatsoever. So it was really, really strange thing. So actually, I thought I'd write a song, you know, my thoughts on it, and remembering people that died, you know, friends, family, you know, frontline workers, especially in the first year when people really didn't understand what was happening, you know.
that could have easily, for me at least, that could have easily been an album title as well. There's several songs that I actually think work as album titles besides Scar.
Yeah, there was a few. I mean, I was thinking of Living on the Limit. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, there's some good titles. But I wanted a positive title, you know, something. I think Seize the Day, for me, did it, you know. Not everybody agreed, actually, you know. But I got my own way.
I remember the first time I heard that expression, carpe diem, was actually, I think, was in Dead Poets Society with Robin Williams.
Well, you would do, because it's Latin, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, so you would. I don't know. I mean, it's quite a, you know, but they still say it in Italy.
Oh, yeah.
You know, carpe diem. You know, it's just like, see ya. You know, have a good day. You know, so it's the same sort of thing, really.
Yeah.
So you're so creative. You put out your output is quite a lot. You know, you put out the Inspirations, the solo record, Heavy Water with your son Sebastian. Are any of these songs something that you've had sitting, you know, like in the riff bank, you know, for some time, or are they all brand new songs that you? You know.
No, they're all brand new songs. I mean, my solo album, which came out, you know, before we started working on the New Saxon album, some of those songs I had for a while. I mean, School of Hard Knocks, I had that song around for maybe a year. It was written, but no, everything's new. You know, we're just working on a new Heavy Water album. This week, actually, we've done the bass and the drums. We're working on guitars together, me and Seb, and the bass. So, yeah, I mean, basically, because we're not touring, and I'm really working from home, I suppose, you know, there's plenty of time. You know, you can do 2-3 hours a day, 4 hours a day. You can do as long as you want, really, you know, and make it fit into your schedule of what you've got to do, you know. So it's pretty cool, actually. Being able to do that, you know, I've got to thank Silver Lining for, you know, allowing me to experiment, you know, me and Seb, and do these things, really.
Yeah, it's great, but and to be able to get that inspiration and creativity, it's, you know, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's not you know, it's something you have to work on quite hard. You know, doesn't come all the time. You have days where you don't write anything, you know, and you're like totally miserable, just get drunk and go out for dinner or something. But, you know, I think you have to wait for the inspiration to come through. I think channeling the inspiration is the secret to everything. And if you can do that, if you can manage to do that, then I think that's the secret, you know, try and channel the inspiration and focus onto what you're actually doing that day with that song, you know, and not get sidetracked.
Yeah, but that must be, I mean, the pandemic and all that comes with it, your creativity and all the stuff that Darren mentioned, your solo album and Heavy Water and Inspirations and the Saxon album, that must have been something good that has really come out of it, your creativity and being able to do all these different albums and trying out different things.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, as far as creativity, I think, you know, I mean, Thunderbolt and Battering Ram, you know, they're all basically the same process. But I think this one's just more focused because we didn't have any distractions like touring or, you know, rehearsing for tours or flying off to do festivals and things, which sometimes takes a week, you know, to get there and come back. So a lot of free time and, you know, we've turned, really what we've done is we've gone from a live band who make albums to a band that makes albums and is going to play live. You know what I mean? It's a different mentality rather than moping around like, you know, saying, oh my God, you know, we've got no gigs. It's just get in there and use that sort of those feelings to write some songs, you know. write some songs about being pissed off. Nothing wrong with it.
Supernova, and even Living on the Limit, you know, super quick, especially Supernova. That's a really quick song there.
Yeah, well, me and Nibs, it's basically about solar system, about universe, really. And, it's a lot of it's based on physics. I'm not by any means, clever enough to know anything about physics, but I read about a supernova. And red dwarf and all these things. I thought that'd be really cool if I put all those words and things into a song, because the sun will turn into a supernova eventually. It'll collapse in on itself and just explode. So that's really where that song comes from. And it's just a cool thing, supernova. It's a great thing to sing. Supernova, great. I like it. It's that sort of 80s. Metal feel to it. And it's got a bit in the middle that is like really spacey. You could be out there in the, in the planets floating around. So that was the idea of that sort of bit in the middle that floats a bit. And Living on the Limits, really, I wrote that one with my son in mind because, he's a bit of an adrenaline junkie, really. He surfs and he does you know, crazy stuff, skateboards, and does all sorts of things. So it's just a song about trying to find adrenaline, you know, like we find adrenaline on stage. You know, some people might find it, you know, riding a bike or a motorcycle or driving a car or, you know, or flying or running or anything that involves adrenaline. I think you are living on the limit a little bit with it, and you're looking for that adrenaline rush. And that's what the song's about, really. And that's why I wanted to finish the album with Living on the Limit, because I wanted it to be a rush at the end of the album rather than a calm fade out. I wanted to really punch it in, you know, like, yeah, fuck it, go for it, you know.
On a just to kind of bring it to a close, on a live situation, you obviously just played the 40th anniversary shows in Manchester and London. And you're coming over here to Sweden, you're playing Gröna Lund over here and maybe something else as well, which hasn't been announced just
yet. Hasn't been announced. Well, no. I think most of them will be Gröna Lund is the big Castles and Eagles thing. Yeah. If we can get it on that stage, we're going to try and do our best, but it's not a big stage, Gröna Lund, because I've been there and Kicken took me down there once to show me what it was. We'll put as many bits and pieces on there as we can. The other one will probably be a 40th anniversary show. I don't think it will be a Carpe Diem show. I think the Carpe Diem songs will probably be played on the Carpe Diem tour, Seize the Day tour. So just if people are confused about that, then, you know, we might do one song on the festival, maybe. But we want to wait until the proper tour to do the songs.
How many of these songs are you planning to play live when you do the Carpe Diem tour?
7, 8, maybe.
Okay, great. Great. Right.
I mean, if people love them all, we'll play them all. You know, it's just that we'll just wait and see. I mean, there are some favourites emerging, you know, so let's see how that goes.
And to end it, favourites for you, what are those favourites for you?
That I don't have any favourites, really, honestly. I just think the whole album's be well put together. So I listen to it and it just goes from one song to the other. And they all have their moments, really. So I don't think I have a favourite. I think actually, and I don't mean this in a sort of, well, you know, our album's the best in the world. I just mean this from when you just sit back and listen to it, I think it's really entertaining and takes you on a journey. The album takes you on a journey to the end of the album. And I don't really have a favourite because if you took one away, it would suffer badly.
Yep.
Right. Yeah.
Excellent, Biff. Thanks for your time, mate.
All right. See you both later, yeah?
See you later, mate. Yeah. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, bye.